Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:24 PM, and that is Central Time. And when we think about the markets in here today, on March 15th, the Hang Seng was down in a big way. So we've had four consecutive weeks now of really quite dramatic drops, where the market has gone from 24 to 18,000 in a very short period of time. And a 25% drop like that isn't something that you see all that often. And we're back in the region of the low from 2016 and from 2012. So it's not an unreasonable time where I think investors might be starting to think about perhaps the selling pressure has gone as much as it's going to, at least in the short term. And we're very oversold. And one thing that was quite important in here today is that despite the fact that when we look at the movers in Hong Kong today, and it was the technology shares leading on the downside, along with the property developers, well, then when we look at the performers on the NASDAQ today, the leading advancers were companies like JD.com and Pinduoduo. So we're starting to see at least some support coming through in US trading for these companies, and it should translate into some steadier action for the Hang Seng tomorrow. Certainly contributed to some steadier action for the NASDAQ today. So it was up in a reasonably impressive manner and demonstrating at least near-term support in the region of 13,000. And this is in response to a couple of different things. So one would be that short-term oversold condition on some of those Chinese shares, because they really have been falling like a knife for most of the last month. But then you also had President Zelensky of Ukraine saying that the Ukrainian people have to accept that they will not be joining NATO. Now, that I think is reasonably predictable. Nobody, I think, really thought that they were going to be able to join NATO. And expresses some sort of reality that the most likely scenario for Ukraine, and well, perhaps not so much likely, but benign outcome for Ukraine would be some kind of Finland solution or Finland hybrid. I suppose it's worth reminding ourselves that Finland's initial interaction with Stalin resulted in them losing part of their country. Subsequently, they were able to defend a border that became their border, and they retained their independence and subsequently went on to join the EU but not NATO. So there's the realistic possibility that because of this incursion, Ukraine will lose part of its territory. And perhaps Russia will get a land bridge over to Crimea, and they'll take a couple of additional ports on the Black Sea. And then subsequently, the rest of the country will have a border that they can defend, and they'll become they will subsequently then attempt to join the EU and stamp out corruption, try to become more of a liberal, governable country. And that is certainly not going to happen overnight. So we can also think then about oil prices, because the price surged higher and then it closed today below the psychological $100 level, but not so much below it. And it's completely unwound the short-term overbought condition. But as long as there are positive sounds and the potential for an armistice coming out of Ukraine, then risk assets are likely to be under pressure. Safe haven assets are likely to be under pressure, and risk assets will start to do better, which is what we started to see today. So we have a very short-term overbought condition on oil. It could easily pull back into the $85 area and still be in the region of the 200-day moving average. And natural gas prices are benefiting from warm weather in Europe. So UK natural gas has come way off its peak. Now, of course, only a month ago, current levels would have been considered to be really very high. But We're in a new reality today. And I think it's unlikely that we're ever really going to come back down and sustain prices below 100. There just isn't enough of natural gas about, and there are too many demands upon it. And of course, because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there's a lot more interest right now in renewable energy. So we're certainly seeing that the shale sector, which had rallied really quite impressively, has pulled back over the last week. But Devon Energy is beginning to demonstrate support in the region of the upper side of the underlying range. U.S. natural gas prices remain within this exceptionally lengthy base formation and not at challenging levels. So even below $5, this is still fractions of where the price had traded in the years of the big commodity boom, and really would need to sustain a move above $6 to signal base formation completion. But it is likely, because of this very wide differential between US prices and international prices, and the increasing prevalence of LNG cargoes. So we're looking at the potential that within the next 5 or 6 years we'll have a much less arbitrage prone natural gas market on a global scale. And that would imply somewhat higher prices in North America, perhaps somewhat lower prices in Europe, but unlikely that European prices are ever really going to pull back into their base formation. And that's pretty much what we have with the oil market already, where the differential between West Texas Intermediate and Brent crude isn't really all that wide, whereas we're talking about multiples when we think about the natural gas price in North America and Europe, or indeed with Asia. One thing that, of course, is looking more positive is that the solar and wind sectors look like they're putting in higher reaction lows. Whatever about the challenges of first building out the battery factories and then matching demand with supply and doing so in a timely, rhythmic manner, that's exceptionally difficult. We've seen in the past that enthusiasm about electric vehicles resulted in a big push higher for lithium prices in 2015. And then so much supply came online so quickly that prices declined again and gave up all of the advance in 2018. And now with demand for electric vehicles ramping higher, we're in a similar situation to what we had in 2015, that there is a lack of available supply. There is investment underway to boost that supply. And when it comes online, well, then the big question is, are we still going to have outsized demand for electric vehicles? And will there be a supply-demand mismatch? So this is a quite different situation to what we had when it was China alone and other emerging markets were driving the big commodity boom. The industrialization of a single country with reasonably predictable plans and government support created a more or less benign, predictable environment for commodities. So if we just simply look at the rhythm of the trend that we had all the way up from about 2002 to approximately 2006, we had a really quite consistent rhythmic advance where we had the succession of higher reaction lows for years at a time. And then in 2006, prices accelerated. When we think about what's going on in renewable energy right now, where there's clear desire to create an alternative because of high fossil fuel prices. There's an alternative, there's a desire to create an alternative to reliance on foreign energy. so the energy independence movement. And then, of course, we have the green movement. So there are clear rationales for investing in renewable energy. And the bigger question, of course, is about intermittency and the fact that these gargantuan wind turbines that are being built today are really first of their kind. And we haven't seen how they perform over their full life cycle. And we don't know what the life cycle of batteries or grid scale batteries is like on an industrial scale. So what we're really depending on is unproven technologies. And of course, they're very, obviously they're really holding promise, and it's easy to get very excited about the performance of wind turbines and the performance of different kinds of solar technologies and the enhancements that are occurring in battery chemistries. But the reality is that we're betting the farm on these technologies, and we're betting that those technologies are going to come to market in a timely manner to coincide with the energy transition. And what I suspect is that this is going to be a much more volatile environment overall, and that we have significant potential for mismatches. So we'll get a more choppy commodity environment on this occasion than we did in the past. And then to add complication to that, we have bond yields rising. And the 10-year yield is pushing up now, and it's up to 2.15%. And this is a really quite consistent advance, where we had the initial breakout, a reasonably lengthy consolidation, support in the region of both the 1,000 and 200-day moving averages, a big upside weekly key reversal last week, and upside follow-through this week. So this is a really consistent trend, and it is looking increasingly likely that the yield is going to push all the way back up and test that 3% level. And it's failed on the last couple of times that it has tested that area. But now we're back above the 1,000-day moving average again, and now we're also seeing the 200-day moving average likely to push up through it. So there's the reality here that this bear market in bonds is going to persist, and it's going to have some negative effects, and most particularly on government finances. And that's why when China is talking to Saudi Arabia, and I think perhaps more accurately negotiating for Saudi Arabia to accept renminbi, well, then that is a meaningful event. There's also the potential that they will negotiate with Russia to make Russia take renminbi in return for accepting their oil. Now, it's not unreasonable for the largest consumer of oil imports in the world to ask its suppliers to accept its currency. And considering the size of the orders that it's putting in, well, they're more than likely to comply. But at the other side of it, the USA is running significant deficits and has an ongoing funding requirement, and has a political situation which is not really conducive to raising interest or raising taxes quickly, and therefore needs to borrow a lot of money. And with China demanding that it's going to pay with its currency for oil, it's putting the petrodollar system, and therefore the hegemony of the dollar as the reserve currency, in question. So this is potentially a difficult environment for the US dollar. Now, it remains still quite firm, because we continue to see money coming out of the bond market and into cash. And there hasn't been a sufficiently large rebound in stocks to start to reattract that money into the market. So the continued strength of the dollar is still representative of a at least partial flight to quality. Now, when we look at European markets, the FTSE 250 has rebounded, and now it's testing the downtrend from the peak in January. And it was a little softer in here today, and it has at least partially unwound the oversold condition. And it's pausing in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. Now, that was a whopping big upward dynamic last week with a long tail on the candle, and it suggests a low of at least near-term significance. So, if that's potentially the low of this medium-term correction, then we should see some ranging occur above the low. And then subsequently, the price should move up through 20,000 again. And if it can do that, well, then we'd have a higher reaction low and the basis for significant support building, potentially a medium-term low. So I think having had the rebound, now we need to see some follow-through and then subsequently some ranging activity to confirm that demand has been found above the low. And we're in a similar situation for most of the European markets. Obviously, they are closer to the conflict in Ukraine, and but also they have more of a value tilt. The UK in particular trades at a significant valuation discount to everywhere else because there was a lot of uncertainty about how Brexit would go, and that contributed to valuation contraction. But generally, Europe, the UK, and Japan trade on lower valuations overall. And with bond yields rising, then the attraction of value is, I think, rather well made. So there's the potential now that on any kind of rebound, it will be Europe and Japan, and the UK will probably bounce faster than the tech sector. What we would need to really reignite significant demand in sectors like the innovation sector or the IPOs or the biotech sector or semiconductors is clear evidence that the Federal Reserve is not going to raise interest rates aggressively. And one thing that I think is potentially important right now is that we have short-term oversold conditions. And the Fed funds implied futures rate has fully priced in 7 interest rate hikes this year. And I've been at pains to say that I just don't believe that that's realistic. But there is an element, and there's potential at least, that we are seeing sell the rumor and buy the news, and that the Federal Reserve tomorrow will say that they are going to raise rates by 25 basis points and that they are going to play it by ear after that. They're going to assess the data as it comes through, and particularly in view of the conflict in Ukraine and the uncertainties with supply chains. And if they do that, well, then there's the potential for the market to rebound because it would reduce the number or the potential for 7 hikes this year. Because that really is a lot. But we continue to see that bond yields are rising. So if the Fed were to become more dovish, then we would anticipate that bonds would begin to catch some support. So when we just flip that around and look at the Treasury future, it's really quite oversold. And we did break down to a new low over the course of the last 48 hours. And it's been down for 7 days in a row. So it's really not that unreasonable to anticipate that we should get at least a pause here. Now, obviously, inflationary pressures are still really quite intense. And it's affecting how people are making spending decisions. So that's obviously negative for growth rates. There's the potential that growth is going to moderate. So then that, of course, emphasizes the threat of stagflation. And That's not good for bonds, and it's not good for equities either. And that's basically what the market has been pricing in, as both of those assets have been falling. If, however, we do start to see an armistice coming through in Ukraine, I put it at a minority possibility. And I think it's much more likely we're going to have a protracted conflict. But if we were to see an armistice, then it would be positive for both bonds and equities. But we're not there yet. And if the Federal Reserve is more dovish, then that would also be positive for both bonds and equities. So with this deep oversold condition and the possibility of a catalytic event tomorrow, then it's not the time to put on aggressive new shorts, but rather just to pay attention to what's likely from central banks. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.